This is the first episode of Odd Pod. I hope you're excited, because I am. If you're wondering about the intro music that sounds like it's heralding an intergalactic breaking news bulletin, I wrote and recorded the cello parts, and my friend Mike Craig contributed those drums you hear. My first interview is with Peter Ferry, who's a percussionist and a pretty active performer here in Chicago. He plays solo and in collaboration with dancers, visual artists, and of course other musicians on a regular basis. And at the heart of all that performing is a real dedication to creating unique and engaging artistic experiences for audiences. So I went to Logan Square to ask him about all these badass things he's been up to. So, wait, before we actually like get to interviewee things, can you actually... I'm not sure how I feel about the Odd Pod name. Can you,
yeah.
Do you have any suggestions for alternatives?
Oh gosh.
If I were to replace Odd Pod at some point in the future, I'm not sure if I will, but...
Oh my gosh. I mean, names are like the hardest...
They are.
The hardest thing ever. I'm kind of into Odd Pod. I mean, I think part of... I mean... So this is the first podcast.
This is the first podcast. I think I'll ask like the first few people, just because I don't know, like your input is important, and I feel weird that my name, like a part of my name, is in it.
I think that's great. I think that's great. Okay. I mean, as much important as the name thing is, it'll be funny to see like what is this?
What is this weirdly named? Podcast?
No, like what is this? What is this podcast about?
Right.
And We were just eating gelato, and it's funny to think that like, because this is the first episode, if you did it a second time, that would be the podcast. You'd be like, oh yeah, you like eat gelato with Audrey and then talk about stuff, and that would officially be what Odd Pod is. As far as a name, I don't know. I think Odd Pod's pretty good.
Okay, well we'll stick with it for now. I guess. Okay, so I guess I'll, like, ask you questions. For some reason I just, like, imagined in my head, like, the noise from Law & Order, like, the...
To be a scene change.
Yes, that's what I just... Okay, but that didn't happen. Okay, so how did you get... You first get started in music? I can't remember. You grew up mostly in Rhode Island, or did you move there later?
Yeah, Rhode Island's kind of my hometown.
Okay.
Moved around a bunch, but Rhode Island, Providence, is kind of home for me, especially high school. And I went up to Boston on the weekends to be a super nerd on Saturdays and Sundays.
Uh-huh.
Which there were, I have like friends who can probably testify to this, that there were literally like senior spring moments, especially.
Uh-huh.
It was like Friday night, senior spring. Like, let's meet up at our friend's house and we're hanging out for a minute. And Peter's like, I have a 7:04 a.m. train.
Oh my God.
To go like study theory and then have orchestra rehearsal and have a percussion lesson. So
casual.
Like, I'm gonna go to bed. Good to see you guys, but like,
aww.
I'm gonna go home. No, but I was cool with it. I was,
yeah.
You know, that was like,
yeah,
I no, did that Saturday and Sunday. I like woke up
party.
Super early and went to Boston and
whoa.
And had percussion study time, music time.
And then you fell asleep on your drums sometimes, but not really, because I bet you went to bed at a reasonable hour.
I went to bed at a reasonable hour.
You seem like you were a good kid.
Yeah, I didn't get too crazy. a couple exceptions, but I was pretty focused.
That's good. That's
pretty
a good
focused
thing.
On stuff.
Well, how did you... Okay, so... And then... So you did, like, youth orchestra and percussion studies and theory and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And then you... How did you end up... Like, you obviously you auditioned and got in at Eastman. What got you interested in, like, studying with Burritt? I mean, I assume it was Burritt.
Yeah.
Was, like, the main
oh,
drummer.
It was absolutely...
Yeah.
It was absolutely him. I mean, he is the man. Yeah, it was a... I went to Tanglewood in high school in the summer, and there were two kids there who he had recruited to come to Eastman, and that was the first time I was really around people of, like, playing percussion at that level, and I was kind of asking around, you know, where are you guys going to school? What's Manhattan School of Music? What's Eastman School of Music? And I basically set up times to go around and meet these people and have lessons before the audition. And I was just clearing out my Gmail inbox, and I had little folders for each school I auditioned at.
Oh my goodness.
And I had my my like very thorough and like cute high school Peter email to Professor Barrett asking for a lesson. Being, hi, like Emphini and Damon Martinez had mentioned you at summer camp, and like I'd love to come and play some music for
like,
you.
Like, here's context. Here's why you should pay attention to me.
Oh my god! And the funniest thing too is like after the lesson, I sent an email that said something like, oh great, you had mentioned like four things that you like listened for in this Bach piece. Like, could you? I just didn't get them afterward. I forgot what they were. Could you write them down?" And Professor Burt wrote me back, and I have the email. Something like, "Yeah, I don't know what four things I would have been talking about, but like in general, yeah, play it well and do like, these things, and
like play. You're Bach great. Like,
why are you freaking out?" But I just really, I look up to him a ton, and I even then I was like, you know, I really admired him and was trying to just soak up as much as I could is what he was saying. And also I didn't want to go to the audition and not do a specific thing he said he was looking for.
Right, you feel like you're supposed to like incorporate all the input.
Yeah,
but
course.
At the same time, when you think about it, he probably, you know, he has lessons with all of the
remember that,
but
right.
Yeah, at the same time, I wouldn't have been that shocked if he had remembered, just because he's Brit and he's so high energy all the time.
Totally. Yeah, it's
talking
totally.
Fast, playing fast, doing everything all the time.
It was funny. I was just in Indianapolis, and he premiered at this big percussion convention a new piece, and it was on like a marimba solo showcase thing with all these marimba greats. And someone played the Con Variations piece that Professor Bird always rocks.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard him play. And Velocity is this other big marimba solo. And then he premiered this new piece by Rob Hohnstein. Sorry, I don't know how to say his name correctly. He's in the Sleeping Giant.
Oh, okay.
Also, going through emails, I found that when Matt Evans, another Eastman person, had first recommended that composer collective, Sleeping Giants, I had sent an email to myself that said, like, look up Little Giants Composer Collective, recommended by Matt Evans. That was, like, an email I fired off to myself in, like, 2010 or something.
I like that that's how you reminded yourself of things by emailing
yourself. Yeah, yeah. No, I still do. And Professor Burt played, like, a really gorgeous kind of like prayer-like piece in the midst of all this crazy virtuosic marimba playing, which is really sweet. I really like that.
Hey,
yeah.
Burrett.
Give me warm feelings.
I'm sure it's nice to see all the Eastman people.
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious, too, because some of the people we were in school with have really kind of nestled into the percussion community, especially the ones who are like writing music really well for percussion, and they get mobbed.
Yeah.
They get mobbed, or you'll be sitting with them and there'll be these high schoolers in front of you and they'll turn around and be like, oh my god, it's this person.
Oh my god, crazy.
And they're literally signing autographs, taking photos, and even doing on the iPhone, doing on the notepad app, you can change it and do like a signature on it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And wait, were people like bringing up their iPads and they're like, can you sign, sign my iPad?
This happened.
What an
I have a photo. I can show
in.
You. I have a photo of it.
Oh my gosh, that's super weird.
Yeah.
I feel really old all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. So you finished at Eastman and like, you know, we met there and we played a bunch together there.
Yeah.
And then you left. No, sorry, that was not meant to sound like accusatory at all.
I ran away.
You graduated. You like finished.
It was time.
And you went out to seek your fortune. You moved to Chicago pretty much right after that, right?
Yeah, right away.
Okay, well, yeah.
Actually, weirdly, it's like a big part of the reason I, you know, after leaving Eastman, I didn't go to a grad school or something, which is like a typical thing, is I wanted to be performing a lot.
Yeah.
And I saw that as like a kind of real life school and experience and learning, and I'm still doing it all the time, and I've been doing it since I was really little, and it felt really fitting that like the day of graduation, or like I think the day after graduation, I was doing this concerto in Rhode Island, so graduation ceremony, and then drove to like a rehearsal with this ensemble there. And that felt to me really, even though then for the next like 2 months I like sat on my hands and like wondered what.
Yeah,
but it's still like as a symbolic thing, it felt to me like, okay, cool. Like you're You're trying to push into actually getting out and sharing music.
Yeah, you finished school and you wanted to perform, so you finished school and immediately went
and
performed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is cool. That's, like, poetic.
I tried to be. I mean, like, I always feel like I over-associate with like, stuff like that.
Like, making connections like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
no,
totally.
I mean, that's fine. I do the same
thing. Yeah. I wonder if I know that people who play contemporary music, I've got to know this because my head works this way. You're playing music that has a lot of not obvious connections to it.
Yeah.
So you have to, in order to either memorize it or just learn the passages, make up
stories
about it. You're like, oh, okay, this is a sixth up, and then the sixth turns into a seventh, and obviously that goes to a fourth because, and you either make up a language or you.
You have to make sense of it when it might not immediately make sense.
And sometimes you're identifying a real language the composer is using, but then other times you're literally making up.
Right.
Like, just to justify how you memorize
it. Like, your own way. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think
that
maybe...
That makes a lot of sense.
I think maybe I do that. That carries over. I do that with life sometimes. Yeah.
I mean, that's like your own brand of astrology.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God.
We were just talking about this.
Right. Yeah, so this composer who I've become good friends with since... Actually, I was just hanging out with him since I moved to Chicago. It's this composer, Mark Mellitz, and I decided to throw this 50th birthday party thing for Mark. And one thing we really wanted to do was to premiere some new piece on the concert. So I jumped into this band of people who were commissioning Mark to do a new marimba solo, and what followed from that were like maybe five or six really wonderful, intense sessions where Mark and I were working together on the material for this new solo piece called Zodiac. And the like awesome part of this piece is it's like a great piece. I love it. I play it. It's super fun. The bad part is like because it's called Zodiac and it's about horoscope signs, I'm like attracting all the crazy people. Yeah.
I mean,
the people come up to me after these shows and they want to talk about how
we won't call them crazy people. We'll call them eccentric and enthusiastic.
Sure. Sure.
Or we could call them crazy, you know, whatever. But yes, they're enthusiastic about the actual like Zodiac and they want to talk
about it. Yeah, which is super hard because I don't want to lie.
Right.
I mean,
well,
like,
that's good.
You're
that's
torn
nice
between thing. Trying to, like, be respectful and appreciative that someone came
right,
to your
course.
Show, and then also not pretend to believe in nonsense.
Yeah, and just be like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very much a Cancer.
You felt the pull of Jupiter tonight, too. Wow. Because I thought my low E's were a little loud tonight, and that's Jupiter.
Can you please say that to somebody someday, and we'll just be like, you don't understand astrology.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I feel like the whole astrology thing comes from this place of like, and that's what's hard about it. It comes from this place of, like, looking to accept.
Yeah.
And so the people tend to be really nice about it.
Right.
There's not, like, mean people pushing astrology. There's, like, really open-minded and accepting.
Right.
So it's funny. You could actually string people along.
You could.
You could say something like, actually, you know, Jupiter recently crossed with Pluto. Have you felt a little bit light? Physically light today? And like, I have felt a little bit light today.
You could. You could do that.
So it's, like, it's not like they're mean people, but that makes it worse.
Then you just kind of feel bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that'll just be an ongoing relationship that you have with your audience.
Yeah, so I'm walking into it with this Zodiac piece, but I'm glad. I mean, it's fun. You do like the 12 movements. So it's, if you play all the movements, at some point you're gonna call out, "All
right,
it's time for Scorpio."
Right.
And then like half the audience is like, "Woo! Like, Scorpio!" Yeah, exactly. and then it turns out like the Scorpio movement is really, really cool.
Oh my god.
So then it's cool. They're like, "Oh man, that's mine. That's my sign."
Oh, that's kinda nice.
It's really kinda nice. And the Cancer movement is really, really gentle and beautiful, and I'm a Cancer.
Right.
And like I do feel like I kind of connect
with
it.
You're gentle and beautiful, Peter.
Oh my goodness. Little Cancer swan.
Aww.
What crab can't?
You. It's a crab.
It's crab. It's a crab. Yeah. Crabs can be beautiful. I'm
fine
with that.
I'm a Pisces. I'm a fish.
So
or
the
I'm two fishes.
The,
I don't know.
The expressive text that Mark wrote for the Pisces one is super fly, super fish, super flying fish.
What?
Yeah.
I guess, of course. Yeah. Yep. I guess that works. Yeah, Superfly. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I sort of related to how you got started in music and how you got here to Chicago. I mean, I assume you like it here. I assume you're happy that you're here and you feel like this is where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I love being in Chicago. I mean, it's a little tricky. I think maybe friends in Chicago pick up on this, but Chicago has this really, really amazing art scene, and particularly this new music scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very supportive. And I feel like I'm a part of that, mm-hmm. in a sense. And on the other hand, I'm really trying to do a sort of work where it basically results in me being out of town a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I'm thinking about that is, like, I put a lot of, like, care and time into these, like, very few specific projects is how I want it to, my life kind of to be structured.
Yeah.
And really, like, consider them from all these different sides and really, like, craft and work with other people and create these things that you can then basically only justify how much time you put into it by taking it all around.
Uh-huh.
Which is also something that I want to do anyway. I want to bring these things to a lot of different people. So my goal really is to have Chicago as a springboard and, like, support
like,
this community, contribute this community, and then also just, like, whoop,
like,
spring out and be
I'm sorry, can
elsewhere.
You, what was that sound again?
It didn't work so much if you don't have the hand gesture. It was like a
So we did our undergrad together, and you put together the first year that Rochester, New York, had its Fringe Festival. You put together this whole solo percussion show, but it was mixed with multimedia, and so we played this piece, Mariel by Osvaldo Golioff, together, and our friend Schwen. She goes by Schwen. Her name is Amy, but she goes by Schwen, and she can, like, I don't know, come after me if she doesn't want me to say her real name. I don't really know how it's working. But video artist Schwen put together this, like, beautiful video that we played with. And, I mean, that was the first time we played it with, was at Fringe Fest, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's what I'm remembering. It was only...
With the video.
Yes, right. We played with the video, and people really liked it, and it was just a really great show overall. I remember people saying afterwards, like, he should, like, go on tour with that. It was super dope. Like,
thanks.
People just loved it. And so I guess what I was wanting to ask was, do you remember at the time kind of, like, what led up to that solo show? Like, what made you be like, I really want to put together this show, and I want to have multimedia be a part of it, and were there certain, like, specific things at the time that made you be like, I should put together this show because of, like, A, B, and C?
Sure.
And yeah, I guess just what were your goals when you decided to plan that program?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe for a lot of people in our kind of community at Eastman at the time, like, that was kind of a moment. Was that, like, the start of junior year or something?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a moment where a bunch of people kind of turned and they're like, whoa, like, who is this kid, and, like, what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it didn't feel like a, like, coming out.
Right.
it was kind of like I had been doing a lot of that stuff already.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot that same kind of thing keeps repeating a lot in my life in different ways. So, like, since I've been in Chicago, I've done a bunch of these collaborations with different dance companies.
Right, yeah.
Or, like, individual dancers.
Mm-hmm.
So I did this first thing on my first recital here, and I did this other thing with these two, and then I did a thing with a company, and then I happened to do something with a, like, really big dance company that got all this press and stuff, and I was like, whoa, what is this? You know, you decided to start doing this. It's like, well, I was doing that.
Right.
I was doing that for a couple years.
Right, that's
just
true.
You just happened to notice this one.
Yeah.
And it totally felt that way with the big solo percussion show that had this multimedia stuff.
You'd already been getting into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, ever since I, like, started doing solo percussion things when I was really little, like, a part of that attitude was always, like, performing for people, A.
Yeah.
So I had this stuff in the basement, and, like, anytime someone came over, I would Hey, can I play this solo piece for you? It's like my brother's like a basketball
player. Right.
So he's like, you know, friends who are not gonna be like listening to Bach. I was like, oh, I could come down and play some Bach for you.
And they're like, cool.
They're like, yeah, sure. But even though those weren't multimedia, I mean, early on it became clear that those like different people were taking it in.
You're trying to like catch like
more
different kinds of people instead of just people who are already going to music
college. And also be real about what their experience is.
Yeah.
So not just be like, oh, did I get them there?
Yeah.
Did I get them to listen to this thing? But like, did they like it? How can I get them to connect with this thing I'm excited about?
Yeah.
And then it starts being about, well, if they're sitting on the bed and it's a kind of a sleepy piece, like they're gonna get sleepy. What if I say this beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if the room is? What if it's dark?
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're looking at everything that goes into what. It was like my first sandbox for kind of like designing concerts. Fast forward a bunch through avant-garde film class and, you know, Schwen and I starting to mess around with the multimedia stuff. That was one of the shows that I had put together that had a lot of these multimedia elements, which to me just feels like a completely natural evolution of like really caring about people I perform for and and being a percussionist, which is kind of open-ended anyway. But I know from the outside it can look like, whoa, you're doing this other thing and it's all this, it's making a performance natural.
Yeah, it's kind of a natural result of what you've already been thinking about and what you've already been. And I actually just remembered, I totally forgot about the, I think it was on your jury the year before that you had a piece, that you wrote and you performed it to like a silent film.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it On Track?
Is that what
it was called?
That's right.
I just remembered that.
This Dadaist black and white film. And it was awesome. Basically, it was around the time when cameras got portable enough that these were like the real troublemaker, like avant-garde people.
Yeah.
You know? It's so the first people who decided, great, let's bring the camera on a roller coaster. It was like one moment of the film is this camera going on the roller coaster.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I remember.
So there were all these kind of precedent things, and it's fun. I mean, tying it to you had mentioned this whole Alarmo Sound thing. Alarmo Sound is this contemporary music band, sinfonietta, whatever you want to call it, that I work with in a bunch of different capacities, and. Basically, the argument I had made to Eastman, who funded my work with them my first year out of school, was I'm interested in doing all these things, and I've been growing up from these baby steps to these bigger projects, but I want to be able to do like really big, imaginative projects that can really impact people.
More like large-scale kind of stuff.
Yeah, just really to be able to dream something big and know how to follow it through, too, in things like really knowing how to collaborate with partners and develop the artwork and also like booking it or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Kind of administrative
things. Artistic to the logistics.
Yeah, totally. All of those things. So I had made the argument to them of, you know, if I hang out with these people for a year, I'll probably learn a lot and I'll know the secrets of
good argument
of how to do it. Yeah, no, it totally was helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get into more what you did with Alarmo Sound. So you interned with them, it was for a year.
That's right.
And then you got a job with them.
Yeah, so Eastman had this fellowship, postgraduate fellowship. And then at the end of that fellowship, they asked me if I would stick around.
And you were basically, you were doing all sorts of different things for them. You were sort of like the all-purpose.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call you like an errand boy, obviously, but like
no,
you
it's
were
crazy.
Doing a lot of different things.
Yeah, it's
things.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Tons of different things, like total X Factor, and it's expanded now even.
So your
even
role
more.
Is like even bigger than it was before,
I,
or just
yeah.
is it just changed?
It's just changed. I mean, the sort of things I'm drawn to, like the work within the ensemble now, is getting more closely into the thinking and the skill set of the artistic director, Alan Pearson. You know, having seen how he puts these products together at a distance, I'm just curious to get a little bit closer to the thinking and the process and see how he I think for the most part does like a really exceptional job of managing relationships basically with these artistic partners and creating work together and really guiding these projects to like a really amazing place. And he has like an uncanny sense for those sort of things in really difficult situations. That these projects take place in. I'm just trying to learn from him.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
He is pretty cool.
Yeah. I guess he's all right. Yeah. Are there any specific ways you can think of that you feel like you've specifically, are there any specific ways that you feel like you've taken things you've learned from working with Alarmo Sound and applied them to your own like solo projects or like collaborative projects outside of that job?
Sure. Yeah, it's almost maybe a more useful. I keep bumping the table.
I think it's fine.
So there are two kind of these fellowships that I actually did, and the other one maybe is a little bit easier to kind of extract some like lessons from. So mm-hmm. the Alarmo Sound postgrad fellowship was one.
Yeah.
And the other is Eastman also ludicrously funded me to basically tour for a month in Europe with Colin Curry.
That's right. I remember.
Right. So
Colin.
So, and I made the argument to them, I do all these kind of concerto things.
Yeah.
And like nobody does that. I was like, there are no percussion soloists to do that.
Yeah.
There's like Colin and like two others maybe in the world.
Yeah, it's like not.
Yeah, as opposed to like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pianists or whatever.
And violinists.
Yeah, of course. And percussion is like super particular.
Yeah.
For that kind of thing. So I made the argument to them that I could, you know, learn from observing him and hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And we had a really great month hopping around different countries doing different concerti projects. And I decided on some advice from Bill Kahn, who was also at Eastman, that I wouldn't bug him with any questions. So I had a little notebook. And I would write down so many questions.
Was it like a moleskin?
Oh, it was a little tiny thing. And I would write all these questions down, all these observations. And then at the end of the week, I'd buy him dinner or something. And we would just plow through these different...
Oh my
then
gosh.
We'd go for a walk. And the funniest part is we were spending entire days together leading up to that. Often, you know, just kind of talking casually about things.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to bug him.
Right.
So I was holding on to all these questions.
You were saving them.
Yeah, exactly. And
then you were like, give me your secrets.
Right. I mean, and also it was just observing things that he did well. Just seeing how he modeled behavior. So you were at, a couple of days ago, I did Michael Torkey's concerto with an orchestra here in Chicago.
That's dope.
Thank you. and very little things about, like, going into rehearsal, shaking the concertmaster's hand, you know, if you have time, talking to the different people in the section.
Yeah.
You know, the timing of having your equipment set, when the conductor pauses, how to respectfully and quickly manage, you know, hearing what they say or knowing where you're going to start or passing a comment on to the conductor without undermining them to the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing him do all of those things really, really at a
level. Like, kind of almost like poise-related things that you might not necessarily think about.
Totally. And the funniest thing is all of those things, he didn't see that I was learning them because to him they were so
now
obvious.
No, it's just like, I'm sure it's really natural for him.
Right. So I would, you know, I would say to him, man, I'm really learning a lot from seeing you in rehearsal. He's like, learning what?
What are you learning?
What are you talking about? But actually, those are things I definitely depend on. Like, whenever I go into do a concerto with a group, I reference back to
like, what would Colin do?
Yeah, or whoever I've seen that like really is a professional
and
is a kind person and is excited and like brings a good energy to the room they're working in. But then there were also all the things that we talked about, which are things I think about too. I mean, one big one is actually, and this has come up in a big way recently. to think about what the concerto you're pitching to a conductor would pair with. So instead of just saying, oh, do this piece that I want to do,
right.
Like, think about all the things that are weighing on them. And, that
right,
they have. And if
yeah.
if you can solve some of those problems by saying, hey, actually, this piece goes really, really well with Brahms 4 for all these interesting reasons,
yeah.
then all of a sudden they have an excuse
yeah.
to tie it in, and you've solved this whole question of where am I going to put this, what am I going to do with this.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can meet them halfway, they're like, oh,
totally. Yeah, there was this talk I went to last year a little bit about curating, and Claire Chase, the flutist formerly directing ICE International Contemporary Ensemble, was talking about how one of the best questions you can ask is, like, where am I needed?
Yeah.
As, like, an artist or a member of the community. And those two pieces of advice have kind of been intersecting in my mind recently. Instead
yeah.
of just saying, oh, this concerto is great, we should do this concerto.
What do I want to do? Like, what are my goals?
And yeah, or,
be like,
or what are their goals?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like
exactly.
it doesn't work if you don't think that.
Yeah.
Like, if you go to an orchestra and you say, oh, we should do this piece, we should do this, they're like, the whole purpose of our orchestra is to do this other thing, which you seem totally blind to. Right? Like, our whole purpose of our orchestra
yeah,
is to play music for puppies. And puppies couldn't hear any of this music because it's all about cats, so it would terrify them. So really sincerely trying to think about what's important to them.
Right, yeah.
And how can you help them get there with whatever you're bringing
yeah,
to the table.
Yeah, I like that.
So, I mean, the big example that's, like, weighing heavily on me now, in a good way, is...
Yeah.
So I'm luckily at this stage. Actually, I guess we've always been in this stage, but at this stage where I can ask, like, the composers who I think are awesome
yeah.
to do things with me.
will you do this?
I guess we've always kind of, like, our friends are always awesome. But
yeah.
But it's like...
But it's still, like, you know...
It's always exciting.
Yeah.
And this composer, I call them composer crushes. And I have
that's appropriate.
I have several composer crushes,
yeah.
and I have a, like, huge composer crush on this guy, Elliot Cole,
okay.
Who has... for some lucky reason for us, decided to focus a lot on percussion.
What a muffin.
And he's a muffin. And so basically it started with, great, well, what if you write me a piece for me and percussion trio, and
mm-hmm.
cool, and then I can play it a lot and that'll be great. And it actually turns out that's kind of a really uphill fight.
Yeah.
So the conversation at some point really shifted toward asking a lot of people who are professors at music schools who lead percussion ensembles,
mm-hmm.
say, like, what would be really good for you? Like, what would be great for your students? What would get you, like, super excited?
Yes.
And that totally kind of, like, swallowed the original project. And the original project is still in there, but now
it was absorbed.
Yeah, and now it's this whole show. We've designed an entire, like, percussion ensemble cycle.
Whoa.
That's, like, their percussion ensemble concert for the semester.
Holy
and it does, like, all these different things
yeah.
that they want. And then it also has this new piece because they want to have a guest come in, and it has this multimedia. It does all these things for the students. But it's not... They don't want to bring Elliot and I in to make Elliot and I happy.
Right. Right. I mean, you're there to serve, like, your student community.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So thinking about, like, what would be really great for these students totally flipped the whole
yeah.
project development on its head, and then made it, like, everyone wants to do this thing now.
Yeah.
Which is super exciting.
Hot right now.
And also means, like, lots of emails, phone calls.
As usual, yeah.
And I was just in Indianapolis and was meeting with people on the half hour, literally
wow.
on the half hour, like running to meet someone, talking for 20 minutes, introducing them to Elliot, and then running to the next person.
Giving autographs where needed.
Right,
you know?
Right, like signing the... No, that was totally... Ivan Trevino signing the iPads, which
of
was
course.
Hilarious.
And I bet he was really into it, too. He seems like he's like, yeah.
He's so nice to these kids. That, you know, they're like, oh, we did this piece. He's like, oh, cool. How'd you do with Measure 15?
Oh,
did you have fun? Did you guys have fun with this part? Like, oh, that's great. I'm so glad. Cool. Well, thanks for letting me know.
Love, love, loves percussion and, like, talking about percussion.
He's a sweetheart.
And talking to students. He's like, just really ready to teach all the time, I feel like.
I think he knows that those interactions mean a lot to those kids.
Yeah.
And he knows it's, like, an easy gift to give.
Yeah.
So why not just spend some attention on them and...
Yeah. Ivan Trevino, we love you.
Yeah. For you, Ivan.
Shout out to Ivan. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was so you and Schwen.
Yes.
You and Schwen have been so you.
It looks like we're going to be the ensemble in residence this year at this really cool art school in Chicago.
Holy crap! Are you serious?
Yeah. Which would be fun.
Am I allowed to keep that in this podcast interview?
Yeah, I mean, I hope. Well, if it doesn't happen, it'll, you know,
okay, then all right,
it'll
cool. happen.
Hopefully, it'll happen later.
I guess you haven't named the art school, so like, it's fine.
Yeah, right. Well, if it doesn't happen, we'll have to find some other really cool art school.
Right.
Like, this was the one all along.
I'll just like make up an art school, and we'll be like, it's Audrey's art school.
Yeah.
There.
Right.
But yeah, so you guys have done. I think you did the University of South Carolina like, entrepreneurship thing twice, didn't you?
Yeah. So we weirdly, like, I'm not a very competition person.
Right, I feel you there.
There happened to be this one competition that was, like, very bizarrely seeming to value things that...
That you also valued.
Yeah, so Schwen and I were like, well, maybe we'll take a look at this, I don't
right,
know.
Right, yeah.
So we did this thing, and then we won, and now we have a manager for our, our like, funny... Yeah, for our funny, like, film and... experimental music duo.
So, like, explain to people who might not know a little more, like, what you guys kind of do.
Yeah, sure. Okay. In the most honest terms, just the only terms, like, we should talk about it in, Schwen, whose nickname is Amy, to friends, we really like working together on things. And we, like, connect artistically, in a really kind of cool way. So the premise of the duo is basically that, like, we wanted to make things together. We did...
Let's make cool stuff.
Yeah, we did all these projects, and then it came to be this thing where, like, cool, what's the next project? And at some point, I was like, are we pretending these are still one-offs?
Right,
like,
right. Like, until clearly... you have, like, 16 one-offs. And
yeah,
like, well...
we talked about it, like, at that stage, before we really thought of ourselves as a duo, of like, well, we both kind of see each other like 20 years from now as still doing these one-offs.
Aww.
So maybe it would be nice.
So maybe just like be a duo.
Maybe just call it a thing. And one of the challenges has been to let that be flexible and to let really the only constant be that like these two people are working creatively together. Because, you know, like Schwen was studying piano at Eastman, and like for someone who's interested in like creativity and experimental art, being a classical pianist at a conservatory is like dangerous.
Sometimes they're just it's not
oppressive even.
So
she's finding her way back to piano, and maybe she finds her way away from piano and is happy there.
She just is like doing what she's interested in.
Totally.
And she's always good at all of it.
Yeah.
She just, like, kills it.
She's amazing. She's an amazing person, too. And the most current vortex we're being sucked into is we were doing this project with a friend of ours named Danny, who likes to write, like, little musical games.
Oh, my God.
We're doing this project where we're going to build... The idea is, we'll see, it'd be fun to listen back to this in 5 years or whatever. The idea is we're going to build 100 electronic instruments that are little boxes that make square waves. They're like synthesizers.
Oh.
It's little magic boxes, as Danny's been calling them. And so I'll tell the story in the best way I can, which is I've made some of these already.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I was recently in my grandma's house, or her apartment in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I was with her and I showed her the synthesizer and it wasn't in a box. It was all like, it was like a bomb.
Oh,
it was all wires
oh,
and stuff. And I plugged it in. And
my
it
podcast is going to be flagged by
yeah,
the mail.
Yeah, right. It made this square wave sound that was like, it's a noise, you know, it's like a square wave.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, is that music? And I was like, yeah, I mean, it could be, right? And
after a fashion.
She's like, oh, you're going to make music with this? Actually, the idea is we're going to make a bunch of these and we're going to give them to the audience and they're going to make the music with this. And she's like, oh, well, what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know. Maybe like just listen to them.
We'll do an interpretive dance to the music that's being made.
Basically.
Gotta get your streamers now.
She gave me a grandma nod that was just
a
like...
A grandma nod. Like, it was good for you, Peter.
No, it was more that like Southern... She's not... She's like a German Jew.
Yeah.
But she gave me that thing where the Southern grandmas will be like, bless your heart.
Bless your little just like, heart.
Well, you go do your thing.
You
I don't
go,
understand.
Girl. You go, Peter.
It was totally that. She was like, I don't know what you're talking about, but you seem to be excited about it. So we have this idea. We're going to make tons of these synthesizers and give one to each audience member. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be in a space, you know, that they can move around and use these, playing these mass kind of games together. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, settling into these installations. It's just this big, crazy idea. We workshopped it at the Museum of Contemporary Art several months ago. And we have some schemes in play for the next stages of developing it. And that's another thing, like someone like Alan in Alarmal Sound has, or Kate Nordstrom in Liquid Music have been helpful in just being sounding boards to how do you develop a project? You know, not just how do you write a budget? How do you like write a grant proposal? Right. But how do you like make good art that isn't just, you know, someone with a canvas painting? Like how do you step into new territory and actually make something like valuable
in a way that's going to like engage people?
And that involves multiple creators.
Yeah.
And
it's a lot of moving parts.
That's not just sitting on the shelf for 5 years and then you're like, what did we ever do with that thing? Like, how do you, you know, keep making next steps and set goals and and that's really
hard.
Fun. It's really fun though. It's like good. It's good.
It's hard in a great way.
Good. Good. Rewarding.
Yeah. Yes. Fulfilling.
Fulfilling.
Fulfilling. Well, that's so awesome. I'm so glad that you guys kept up like doing that, and now it's a thing.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely stretches me as like a collaborator. Most of my collaborations are like, if I'm working with a composer or I'm working with like a conductor in a concerto thing, I can kind of just kind of come in and like, it's like being a house guest.
Yeah,
you kind of come in and you're like, oh, okay, cool.
You're sort of on their turf.
Yeah, I'll like great. I'll like double wash all my dishes because that's a weird thing in this house, and that's fine. Great, cool. We can and you can like do it for a few days.
Yes. Yes.
But when you're, like, living with someone, artistic, like, when you're, like, a longer-term relationship, it's hard. You have to, like, you have to be really, like, sensitive
like
and listen. And
all relationships.
Yeah, and I'm, like, I'm not someone who, like, does a lot of relationships. So, like, I'm not, that's not really where my, like, my experience is at. And she definitely stretches me to, I mean, in her unique situation, be sensitive to her, like, constantly evolving therapeutic relationship to music.
Yeah.
Specifically piano, or even performing. And to be respectful of, you know, how her metabolism of creating art and how she relates to all those things. So the idea is not that we push ourselves too hard and break or do something that makes her unhappy, but that we can find a way to keep this common element of, like, we like making work together.
Yeah.
How can we keep doing that in whatever shape it takes?
Do you have, like, any long-term goals, like, specifically here in the Chicago music community?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the kind of elements of my, like, long-term goals are already in play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is kind of a philosophy thing for me. So there was a cellist at Eastman who... had this isn't you.
It's not like there was lots like, of cellists like, at Eastman.
Cellist at Eastman who isn't you, who once like messaged me and asked if they could call for advice. And that's a thing that happens from time to time, and I'm totally happy to do it. For the same reason I have like an open studio policy with composers.
Uh-huh.
If composers want to bring their piece in, even if it's written for someone else, like if someone else then they come over and they bring the piece and we set it up,
mm-hmm.
we walk through it. So I had a call with this cellist to give her advice, and it was like almost funny. She was like, oh, what I want more than anything is to like play music, like visit a middle school or something and play cello for the kids.
Yeah.
And I was like,
just do that.
You're
just
right.
Like, go and do
that. Yeah, exactly. Just go and do that thing. and just get started.
Follow
doing
your
it.
Heart.
Yeah, that's like especially that one's a very
that's
easy.
Like, that's feasible,
right? If it was like I want to be the ambassador to France,
like that's a like, okay, loftier goal. That
let's
you're
work toward
have
that.
To,
yeah. Let's you know let's think about what you could do. But if it's like I want to like you could do that tomorrow. You could
right.
literally do that tomorrow.
You walk into middle school and be like, I want to play.
Can I just yeah, I just pay for a second, or you go in there and you set up a visit. But,
right.
But it's so. That attitude, which in that case seems so obvious, to me also seems obvious if you want to, like, commission a concerto or collaborate with a lighting designer or any of these things. Like, the easiest thing is to just start doing it,
mm-hmm.
Even if it's on a really small scale. So I've been kind of aggressive in my practice, I hope, as an artist and, like, trying to at least get on the ground floor on the sort of things that I'm interested in,
yeah.
That it's not like there's a major chunk of my artistic interest that isn't in some way in the diet of the things I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that I don't have a Google Doc that has, like, all the projects for the
right.
next 5 years that I hope to, like, and, like,
how
can you
tell me, like, one thing on that Google Doc?
Yeah, sure. I mean, This new piece that Mark wrote, I really would love to make an album. I've never made an album.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because I really respect albums.
Right. You want, I mean, yeah.
It's not just that I want to do, like, a good job. It's like, curate. I don't write music except for that one thing I did. Like,
yes.
Sophomore, but that I had to do that. It was a jury thing. They had to write a multi-piece. But I don't really write music. So my artistic output is curation.
Yeah.
You know, and performing and phrasing and all those things, but is basically in curation. That's my creative medium, whether that's formatting a recital or guiding projects with collaborators. And for me, an album should really be a single kind of statement. So my fix to that has been I'll just make a bunch of YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Because those can be one-offs.
Yeah,
and that makes
absolutely.
Sense on that platform.
Yeah, totally.
And also, it's this weird kind of other facet of the multimedia work.
Yeah.
Which is the video editing and,
mm-hmm.
and working with a cinematographer or whatever, videographer, whatever, whoever it is for that project. This project of, you know, this big piece of Mark's that I think is really a knockout is enough of an excuse, I think, to collect some more of Mark's music. The solo snare drum piece of his
mm-hmm.
and a couple other things I'm thinking about. To make an album that is a clear statement. It's you know, me playing Mark's solo percussion music.
Yeah.
And has this focus on this new piece that we had been working together on as he was creating it, and has this funny tie-in to the horoscope thing
right.
that would draw
yeah.
all the crazy people in. And we can all just laugh together. We can just laugh and laugh and laugh at
oh
the horoscope
God.
People. No, it's cool. I mean, it's fun because it does actually invite a lot of discussion.
Yeah.
Even if the discussion is like, why do we care so much about this? Or, you know, it really prompts people to connect with the movements and
yeah.
to start to talk about that stuff, which is kind of cool, as opposed to that thing where you play a piece and it's like, that was interesting, great.
And I feel like when you have, like, a really specific programmatic element like that, it makes people think even more critically about, like, the detailed content of the music. At least, I don't know. That's kind of what I think, but
I see that.
I don't know.
I see that angle,
what
too.
What do I know?
Yeah, I mean, so that's one thing. But, I mean, like I said, there's, like,
a whole Google Doc.
There's a whole Google Doc of things.
Dream projects.
Totally. Totally. Composer crushes.
Composer crushes.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, cool.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it is a good problem to have. The next step is just, like, making them composer boyfriends and girlfriends.
Yeah, which maybe, like, the cello thing, like, is not that hard, right? Because, like, if they're your friends, you can just kind of hang out with them. And it's also the thing of taking what they need. Cause,
yeah.
So, like, I think a big part of the project with Elliot Cole and all those percussion ensembles is he felt this kind of this kinsmanship with the percussion community.
Mm-hmm.
That he had written some of this music, like this bowed vibraphone piece, Postludes. And percussion community went crazy for it.
Yeah.
Crazy for it. Everyone played that piece and loves it. And I think for him, having me go around and knock on the doors
yeah.
of all of the percussion leaders of the community and advocate for his music
mm-hmm.
is something that brings a lot of value to him.
Totally.
So I mean, these different composers, maybe if you have a composer crush, maybe there's something that, that they're really thinking about creatively or something that you can fill a gap for that.
Yeah, just be like, what do you need? I'm here. Take me.
Yeah, and it might not be the thing that you had in mind.
But it could be better.
Could be better, exactly. It's like...
I only have so many ideas.
Yeah, it's fun, and we can't all only be doing our own
ideas. Our own ideas.
Another big part of the, you know, dreaming really big projects is to think of projects that are bigger than you can do by yourself.
Yeah.
Which either means you have to do it by yourself over a really long period of time, which is a thing,
mm-hmm.
or you have to work with other people, and you can't do that if everyone's only doing their own thing.
Right.
And the flip side of that is you have to enable other people's work too.
Totally. Well, this has been great. I'm not a pro at interviewing
That's
yet.
Great.
You know?
That's great.
But I do want you to maybe mention a couple things that are coming up for you, like in the winter / spring.
Sure.
Like if you have any performances or projects or anything like that that you want people to know about.
Sure. I mean, it's the normal kind of storm of things. There's this music video. Mm-hmm. That was made for Michael Turkey's concerto in its string quartet version.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that piece, and in that version, it's just super, super cool. And the music video is really beautiful. It was shot in this industrial ballroom in Chicago with this really cool string quartet. Yes, I mean, hopefully that'll be a thing that people can check out.
Cool.
And they don't have to be anywhere to do that.
They just be at home in their jam jams.
Just have the jam jams on and... Listen to some Michael Turkey, and
that's how I prefer to listen to Michael Turkey.
Yeah, I think it's how everybody prefers to listen to Michael Turkey.
Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for being my first interview ever for this podcast.
Very happy to.
Congratulations are in order for Peter, who joined the artist roster recently for Marimba One. So if you see him, give him a high five. Thanks for listening to this first episode of Odd Pod. Come back in 2 weeks and listen to me talk to Lindsay Fredrickson.